Welcome to The Ether. Today is Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. Today on The Ether, part 2 of the 2-part CeFi space, developing for NFT artists. Let's take a listen.
Yeah, interesting stuff. for sure. But yeah, Midas, you were saying?
Predators. So absolute let's fucking predators. Chase that.
Yes, Midas, my man, let's go. Like, and you know, oh, Steffi, if you need help, you know, starting an NFT project, yeah, we could take some of your music and make like a little Steffi jingle. And as you know, you own the rights to that.
So, like, my music is literally shit. It's just nothing worth.
But you know what? Check it. So Gary V, right? When he released his first collection, he released like the first version, the first iteration, and it was just like kids' sketches, you know, like it was like a however many, like he made a bunch of characters and like stick figures. And then iteration 2 used some of the funds from those stick figures to actually generate a decent like animation and like characters. But now he owns the intellectual property to those first ideas. So he never had to buy it off anyone or do anything by taking it, you know, sort of taking advantage of a young artist and then going and monetizing their IP. He just used his. So what we're saying is you could own the IP to your work. You could put your shit songs out there and then somebody could go and remix it, but you would own the rights to that remix, if that makes sense. So you're giving individuals the tools and you say, hey, community, like I've already released music and I've already had like 10 people like, churn me back a little interpretation of that music. Now, if I was doing it legit, I'd be telling all my publishers and like, hopefully they're not sitting on this call listening to the little theme songs that I'm putting with Legionnaires. But you know, I'm trying as hard as I can not to put this music out.
Sometimes the YouTube remixers are actually better than the original artists themselves. Sometimes, yeah, if you notice that.
Right. And now using like something like this sort of, I don't know, it's like an inheritance NFT, you can put your ownership of that IP in, bake it into the code, I guess, for your samples. And then you could give it to me. I can make a remix. And we put that information into the metadata or whatever. And now you're earning X percent on my NFT sale. Hank?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like derivative. It's you're using royalties with derivatives. So you can like, I don't know. I think this is, I look at DeFi and like see similarities and like extracting value out. Like you could refract a base NFT into its intellectual property holding and like commercial value or something, and then throw that in Prism or I don't know. I'm not the finance guy, but I look at
well, it's happening. Just whoever owns the rights, yeah, to whatever's on the smart contract. You know, that's why all of these artists are now able to share sort of their journey and their story with their community. There's a project called Aku. And they've got a really incredible project that, you know, they've released chapters of a story. So instead of releasing sort of a PFP profile picture NFT project, they released like a couple thousand editions, like sort of like a comic book style of like a 1 minute to 2 minute video. And those were what they were minting for their holders. And so they would get like a piece of the story, and like after the, you know, 10 chapters with a couple thousand editions, they've now got enough money, they own the IP to not only say no to the studios, but now have enough money to go and fund the actual like film, you know. So it wasn't like they were paying high quality 3D animators to do it. They were just getting the idea out there with like low poly resolution sort of animations. And like, you know, Gary V, when he's doing it, he's just doing it on a napkin, you know, but that's the value is in your idea. You know, and I think that's even with artists, that's why they find it hard to, you know, to charge for their work, is because they don't understand what intellectual property is. And in this world that we're in now, it's sort of, we can apply similar commercial real estate rules to, and not that I know much about commercial real estate, but from what I'm hearing, sort of commercial real estate to this digital real estate that we're selling. And you know, from that, you'd look at sort of three areas of monetization, which would be the capital gains, I guess, in your building, or sort of the capital growth in your NFT. There's some type of subscription model, which is sort of, you know, if somebody was utilizing your PFP, for example. So say the Doodles or Galactic Punks or whoever, you can put a copyright restriction on your commercial license restriction to say up to $100,000 and say, hey, after 10 months of you using my little PFP and I've given you the commercial rights to use it on your bakery, is the Board 8 Bakery, you know, Board 8 Yacht Club Bakery. If you start making over $100,000, you pay us 10% every month as sort of like a renter's fee. And now, you know, they're able to build with the tools you've given them, and you're able to, you know, make rewards on your idea, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at how some projects were launching on, for example, Pylon Gateway. I think Deviance Faction had some, for lack of a better word, like fundraising through there, but to basically bootstrap liquidity. And I was thinking of this from the angle of more projects where it's like, okay, you have not just like an, you have not only just some intellectual property that you have sort of like developed, but you also develop essentially like a credibility. Mm-hmm. Such that, you know, projects that do consistently deliver, you know, have essentially a credibility amongst the community. I don't know what the metrics look like, but I would guesstimate that if an existing project that people are a fan of puts out a new set of NFTs, that many of those same fans will tend to go and buy more of those, I'm guessing. Yeah. So like the Hellcats are probably going to go buy some more, you know, Hellhounds or whatever, and you know, whatever, you know what I'm like,
they buy into the brand, the trust in the brand.
Yeah,
it's so the same with the Skeleton Punks, like that brand couldn't even die, they couldn't even kill it, you know.
Yeah, so like the idea is like, once you have a little of that credibility, then it's also a question of, okay, what if the community had an interesting idea that emerged from community forums and such, and you know, ultimately to fund the creation of that new set or whatever you want to call it, you create a scenario where let's say you fractionalize the project into like, so let's say your project costs you believe it's going to cost like $50,000 of development time, let's just take a example, to fund whoever, artists, whatever, right? And you say, okay, well, we believe that this is worth, you know, 50K worth of time. And SIAC decides, hey, I want to, you know, build this particular, I'd like to see you guys build it because I like your art style. I want to commission an entire NFT thing. And what you could do in theory is you could sell like the whitelist NFTs that are just a blank, meaning like they just simply are a placeholder. And you essentially securitize the entire process to where people are just buying like, you know, something, a numbered piece of art, like the number one or two or like literally nothing on it. And then you would exchange that at a later time for the actual, you know, NFT that you're interested in, to the extent that like if you were an early investor in that project and you literally just wanted to have specific art created, the people that that fund that could literally just keep the ones. Like they have a higher choice in the, not just the whitelist and art random minting, but can actually make some decisions about like, you know, what they want created and you know, which ones they want or something like that. So
yeah, Seppi, that was a perfect play-by-play. Like I hope everyone took notes because that was like the play-by-play to drop an NFT project and an idea and build an idea around a community, which is what we can create here, is these like gated incentivizations around a mission.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about how that would be funded, right? Because I've seen different projects like 777 Casinos looked pretty interesting, and where they literally just securitized the NFT, the ownership of that NFT guaranteed that holder, you know, the utility function of yields or whatever. But it helped it helped the project. The main question I asked them was this: when I had 777 on, I'm like, if this is so lucrative, and this is why I was suspicious of that project. If this is so lucrative, why do you want to give away, the long-term revenue of this project for so cheap, right? And I didn't fully understand like why, because the NFTs weren't that expensive. They were like $100 each. And I don't remember how many there were, but it wasn't that many. And I was kind of like, okay, well, like what gives here? Like what's, where's the rug pull? And what's, you know what I mean? So,
some of them even give them away for free.
Yeah. And what it was it by distributing a lot of these things for inexpensive amounts and making sure the investors were actually making good yield off of their $100 investment, they're making like $5 a month or something. It's ridiculous. It's actually pretty high. You're going to get a owners of this that are going to then virally market your online casino because for everyone that goes and plays, you know, the NFT holder, they're evangelists because they're making money off the thing now. It's not just waiting for the NFT's price to go up.
And but you haven't sold a security yet, you know? So you're not even a securities business.
So like you could basically take an existing project that already has some clout and say, hey, look, we're going to have this mystical thing that we're producing. We're not even going to tell you what it is. It's not security if you don't make any promises. And, you know,
that's
and
why so you just have basic, no roadmap. Where we go and we don't need
We have no roadmap. I mean, we have no clue. And what we're going to do is we're going to make some cool shit. And you can throw in some money and gamble on this.
Sefi, I'm not joking, Hank. We just got to build Sefi a project because, like, he's already been doing it for a year and people trust him and believe him. Like, let's just do, like, pick your lucky number and allow the community to buy into your community artifact.
This theory, right. And then,
exactly.
And then basically, sort of like what 777 did, you just basically make an inexpensive thing that anyone can basically afford, right? The goal is not to, you know, make a bunch of money on the so-called mint or whatever. And the longer term revenue, if Hank has the ability to create the right sort of contract, is the longer term revenue is in the sort of like securitization of that NFT, not necessarily in the value of the NFT going up itself.
How about this? I will make you a character, a cartoon. Like I can create all the pictures for you. We could literally do it with 100 people. Like that's what, even like TFL, like Terra started like that. It was 100 people in like a Telegram going, we can do this. And what you're saying, you just gave the blueprint for, cool. 200 of us go, cool, we're going to buy these tokens for whatever we set the price to because we're a community and we go, this is what we can all afford. And then we all ban into this or we do it and someone donates and we just like give it out for free. But this is how we create a demand for these tokens that allow us some type of extra access to your
information. Yeah, like or something.
We should advertise in.
Or something like, simple. Like think about it this way. Like, okay, like I can't afford so-and-so amount of money. So what I'm going to do is, but I do have some Luna, and therefore I'm going to take my bond to Luna, stake it with this platform, and the yield from that is going to go towards funding my thing, and I just have to lock that Luna up for, let's say, I don't know, 3 months or 4 months or whatever that amount is, and then you get your Luna back, and the yield from that, you know, is not draining the anchor pool, but simultaneously it is benefiting like funding this project or whatever.
Yeah, Steph, and that is why people will buy this. You don't promise the roadmap, but I would buy it now. If you went, I'm going to release 1,000 NFTs.
Well,
I'm buying.
And part of why you why you can't promise the roadmap is because then you will get in trouble for securities issues, right?
Totally.
So
we're going to be making it like self-sustained kind of thing, right? So
well, you could take some like for me with the project that I'm creating. I'm using some of the IB revenue that I generate in my company, and I'm going to sign a contract that says I'm going to donate this much percentage of the revenue that I receive from my company into this wallet that is governed by our token, you know, our treasury, our vault, whatever.
Right, right. Yeah. So there's all sorts of permutations that I think, you know, any projects can technically use. And you just have to have a framework for not getting in trouble with securities related issues. Remember like what someone was saying about like having an LLC and the works, you know, in order to not have to do all that nonsense and basically just totally decentralize it, there just has to be no, like, you know, as far as the public is concerned, there is no central figure, right? Like it's just, you buy, the only way that you get voting rights is just simply by owning that NFT and that's the end of it. Like there's not any other guarantee except voting rights in that group, and then the group then decides how they want to like spend this money. And all you really have to have is the credibility of some decent artists, I think. And mm-hmm. ultimately, the people would be interested potentially in like a basic vision, and you don't have to get too deep into it, I think, if you're not talking about lots of money.
Right? I mean, this is the start of like a record label right here. Like us right here, we could onboard artists. Like I can coach them in. I know how to help them distribute their art into the space. Hank takes over on the technical ability, and then you tell them where to go and make that extra coin on their money, and we've got ourselves the future of record labels. In my opinion.
Yeah, kind of like little DAOs and whatnot, and yes. making the music you want.
Yeah, totally. Like this is absolutely doable.
Yeah. Let the artists decide what fee the platform should take. I don't see a way that's more fair than that. It's just control over their future.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it does. Because if the platform finds that fee is like unacceptable, then they can decide not to host it. Whatever, that's their business, right?
Exactly, and they can go to Solana or somewhere else.
So I should add Legioners to the space between all of us.
Yeah, I'm down.
Or whatever.
Listen, if you need an artist, I'm here.
We're just talking out loud, mainly.
So yeah, yeah. I'm trying to make a splash. I'm trying to like kind of rug pull the record industry. That's my mission, is to help artists, monetize their IP in this particular space. But I've had to spend a long time trying to understand. And then you started scaring me earlier when you're saying like, you know, the Pinata, if they pull the plug, we're all fucked. So like now I'm like, oh shit, like where is our information stored?
Yeah, see, these are the relevant sort of details, right?
Like, no one's getting down here into the weeds. Like, you know, the publishing companies I'm talking to, like, they're not.
You know, we'll make sure of that.
I did
we'll
make sure of that. Last week, I talked to the founder of Flux, Daniel Kamian, and he was on, and he's going to be on. I think we're going to do a thing on Friday. So maybe the answer is that the solution for the decentralized system is either like an Akash or Flux. I think Flux is a lot easier to deploy on because they use Docker containers. I don't want to get into the technical details of that. I know a little bit about this, just enough to get in trouble. But Flux actually is an interesting decentralized mechanism, and the cost of deployment should be relatively low. There are a lot of actual projects on Terra that are going to be deploying their front ends on Flux in sort of like a multi-nodal decentralized way. So essentially it can't be shut down and the data is secured on servers around the world. So it's like a distributed cloud type of arrangement. And there's going to be folks from Terra Money, and we're going to talk with Daniel about what's going to happen there. But I think there are several projects several projects are actually doing this already on Terra, and we're going to find, they're going to announce, I guess, more of which projects. So far, Anchor Protocol is doing this, but there are definitely more of them to decentralize the front ends. And what I'm saying this for is because if the front ends get decentralized, it's not that hard to decentralize file storage, relatively speaking. And you know, he would know exactly what to do in terms of deploying files in some way. Like let's say we don't trust going through Pinata or whatever. We want these to be deployed in some more decentralized way, that there might be ways to do that. And I don't know how, you know, and it may be just simply just running a open source file sharing software and basically run it on Flux. And you know, it could be that simple. It
so yeah, now I can go back to my regular plan, and my nerves are settled, and I can bring continue to bring these artists. Like, what are you trying to say?
But yeah, Punks and Sayak, I think, had some comments. Punks, go ahead, chime in.
Yeah, I actually wanted to mention about the standard when CFI was mentioning about it, and then when Legion was talking about IPs, and then I started to get drifted away. Yeah, but in any case, I think for the NFT standards, we actually do have standards. We do use like the COSM WASM NFT repository, and within itself, I think the way it was built is that it is meant to be extendable. You know, so as long as we follow that COSM WASM standard, NFT standard, we could most probably work across inter-blockchain, and I believe that standard is already there. Yeah, so just wanted to chip chip in on that, and maybe also about the IPFS. Actually, IPFS, it's usable for all of us, so we can just go to ipfs.io, and then there's they even have a front end app, you know, where we can upload the stuff, and they have some integration with Pinata, right? So as long as you have your original, you know, JPEG or whatever it is, you can always sort of like host the same JPEG under the same ID, right? They have some algorithm that calculates the IP, the ID of the actual JPEG. Yeah, so if Pinata actually closes, you still have the base IPFS infrastructure, which, you know, as long as you hold the image locally in your computer or somewhere, you can always host it up again.
Yeah, good news, good information. Sayak and then Marty. Sayak, you there?
Hey, yeah. No, I just thought it was interesting with your little Cephi grant idea, kind of maybe doing a collection where it's most of the funds or something, or like significant portion maybe just goes to kind of like what Kadena's doing, right? Like $100 million fund for things that to build on Kadena, right? Kind of you could do the same thing for Terra almost for builders, right? Kind of like what Sumo's doing for good ideas, 40 Luna per person or whatever, per project or whatever. It's not a bad idea actually to kind of bootstrap just the Terra ecosystem.
Yeah, and to some extent, there's
from LFG, Cephi.
To some extent,
maybe pinked.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. If it's like Terra related, maybe, yeah, LFG sort of built for that, maybe.
We can ping Rami and say, oh, give us 1 million, not much.
Yeah, I mean, for new builders, you know, an interesting concept is if you start out, like, let's say you're starting out new and you don't know the first thing about what you're doing, but you have a big idea and you get a group together to make it work. You know, the good thing about having LFG and the community fund is, in theory, if the project is worth it, I think if it's a product that or service that promotes Terra, then I think LFG would be potentially interested. And, you know, compared to the sum total of all the money they have, it's like a nominal amount of money to support small projects. So I think that would probably be potentially feasible.
We can make a proposal or an RFP and present to LFG, like, oh, give us this because we are trying to do this.
Yeah, and if it's not a promotional style project, if it's something that's more like that would be related to community funds, the only problem with that is getting everyone to vote for something is the tricky part, right? Like the bigger the group and the more
smaller
complicated,
the chances. Yeah.
The smaller the project, the more complicated it is to do something simple like get community funds.
So we can divide that by, you know, making some bifurcation in the help we need, right? Like what we can do and what we need the funds for, like anything specific, right? And then we ask for only that. That may not be a trouble, right? Because other things we are taking care of. So
you can almost make the first project maybe like something that would develop a governance for like voting sort of protocol.
Like specifically one of the ones we were talking about earlier today was the idea that, like, okay, a lot of people, Mandiv was talking about how a lot of people like, you know, their various Terra projects, you know, whether it's a Prism or, you know, an Astroport or maybe one of the marketplaces or whatever. And the profile, the icon for those, the logos,
badges.
For those badges could be, you know, brought together in the form of minting a Twitter banner, you know, for your Twitter page. And, you know, that would be a fun little thing, but that would kind of be like a good source of like, it, even if they were like almost free to mint, you know, where people could just mint one and, you know, it'd like analyze their wallet or something and, or something like that. And you could, you know, mint these things. They wouldn't even have to be limited. They could just be for promotional purposes for Terra, right? Because the more people see these things, then, you know, just, it's just good for the public, for example. But those kinds of projects, while being, you know, they can, so what's interesting about projects like that is that if you haven't done one before, and it's not to make money for yourself, but just to kind of get in and, you know, some of these projects are like incubated such that like new developers, like Hanks in School, for example, you know, it creates a funding mechanism to do some sorts of projects that are general community benefit and then they get the experience needed and maybe more of the, you know, you got to eat, right? So like ultimately they have the experience to then go on to build bigger things from there too. So it's like smaller community projects might be a way to incubate for the much larger types of things people care about, or maybe I'm wrong.
We can have a model in place which gives the ability to scale it from small to medium to large, like a t-shirt sizing, right? So
yeah, sure. Like yeah, usually what you do with these type of projects is there's like milestones. So if like, okay, you can make this part work, then you know this part of the funds will be released for the next piece, et cetera, et cetera. So
there's nothing that exists right now anywhere. Like if you want to try something, you need to keep your own thoughts and tools in place and then figure out how you're going to do it. I mean, that's exactly what we're going to do, but then we will use that information to create a framework for upcoming projects.
Because my understanding of like Hank and Pete's projects are they're sort of like just meant to benefit the community at large, which they're, you know, doing it for free is one thing, but to me, those should be like community funded, honestly, like, you know, people have to eat basically. So volunteering is great and everything, but you know.
It's an open buffet.
open buffet. Marty, what was your comment? Go ahead. And then Roe after that. Marty, you there? Maybe.
He's in blockchain.
Marty. Sometimes his connections are plus or minus.
The spaces are really weird. I mean, if you don't have a good signal, I mean, you lose whatever person is saying. Like yesterday I was walking, you asked for me a couple of times, then you bring it down me as a listener because I wasn't
there,
speaking.
I couldn't even speak. Something happened. Ro, are you there? Z?
Yeah, I am. Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of go back to the idea of, I guess, music NFTs. Really cool idea, but I was wondering, like, in the smart contract, or you know, say someone has access to NFTs and you have these samples and loops and hooks or whatever, and someone on Twitter takes that and remixes it, how do you ensure that you're getting the royalties when they, you know, go and make a, you know, platinum hit from, you know, from one of your beats or something like that? So any thoughts on that?
So from a smart contract perspective, I think that like derivatives is a really like good way of voluntarily showing this. Like if you're going to dox yourself, David can jump on and explain IP better than me after this, but like the whole concept of derivatives and having this like deterministic complete way of routing money from one project to another, like I think that's missing in NFTs, and like these things hold real value. Like let's treat them like DeFi. And actually, yeah, David, do you want to explain like the IP?
Yeah. I mean, so you know, it's difficult to enforce IP on chain, but that's why you have an in real life copyright contract that says, "Hey, this is your work." And if somebody on Twitter goes and, you know, mislicenses your work, you have the ability to file a lawsuit against them for for using your work without permission. And it's no different on chain, except the thing here is that people want to use your original NFT because they want the ownership. And so anyone that copy and pastes it and uses it outside of that NFT is just sort of marketing your pieces for free, you know, and you're still rewarded with the sort of capital growth of your NFT because the demand for it is going up. And so it's, I think we have to change the mental model of this like copy and paste and people using our work and say, actually, no, give it away for people to go and use for free. Give them this commercial license up to a certain standard and ask them to respect these rights. And you build it with the community that wants to. So say you've got these samples. If it's something that somebody would like, you'd think they would take it because they like it and they want to do something good with it and they would want to bring it back to you to show you rather than run off and make it their own. And if they do make it their own, then, you know, hopefully you've then got a little bit of money from your NFTs to go and, you know, hire a lawyer and say, hey, that's my money, you know?
Yeah, 10-4. So it's kind of multifaceted. So you you have rights as an owner of the NFT up to a certain, you know, extent.
Commercial license. You can give a commercial license to someone to use up to a limited, say, a restricted amount. Say, hey, if I give you this tool, and like a tool, if you
earn up to, it's not that different from like when you go and get like Logic Pro or Ableton plugins or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like some of those, you know how you kind of you can pay for them, and there's also sites you can go to download lots of samples, for example, and they're sort of like. By paying for it, you basically have already paid, covered the license for it. And that's basically the way those work. And generally, if it's any musician who really wants to get big, they're going to be disincentivized to just steal it, because then if someone comes back and says, hey, that's my sound, you didn't pay for it, they would have to prove that they have done so, right? So it's a problem if they get big. For small artists, like, okay, like they're using it for free or like copy pasting or whatever, does it really, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. I've got people all over the world using my music, like in like the far corners, but like it's not really affecting my everyday life. And if they're making a bit of bread to get by, like, good job, you know? Like, I'm glad I could help you on this journey, you know?
It's hard to know what to give away and how much what you give away ends up contributing somehow to the network effect and the advertising effect or whatever.
I got you. Okay. Well, great. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
Hey, Cookies. What's up?
Hey, I actually wanted to react about the idea of licenses. Right now, we are building licenses for NFTs that will actually categorize the art of the artist. The idea in the end is to offer different licenses, some that are completely free to use, some that are specific to commercial use or such. And those are going to be integrated with the system of print on demand, of course, but also with the whole system of NFTs. If every time you got an artist in real life that you want to verify that he's not actually misusing the art of someone else. If anyone could show the piece of art that they are selling, and automatically at the back of it, there is the license that actually categorize the rights of use, you wouldn't get those issues. And indeed, the lawsuits and the trial that would come out of those would be way easier to deal with as well.
Yeah, we need to make sure it's not copyrighted or trademarked items. It has to be custom made from scratch, not replicating anything at all.
Yeah, and that's the tricky thing, is how do you prevent in the first place from some kind of infringement from happening at the time of the, say, minting of an NFT? And that's a whole other set of problems, I suppose.
So as for those, we can imagine that most of artists, especially digital artists, we can talk about physical art after that. But you can imagine that every digital artist will have some source files. Those source files will have timestamps, dates. They will show if the metadata has been tampered with as well. And those are very good ways to prove it. If you go to a system of DAO and you think about a consensus of artists that actually validates those licenses, you can pretty much have a risk-free environment for artists, but also for users of the license. Because if you buy an NFT, you want as well your rights as a user, as a buyer, as now a right owner, to actually have your right expressed. So I think
what's your vision? This is a really good topic, but what's your vision for the system of recording? Mendiv, I think your mic is on. It's kind of like making some funny noises. but what's your system for recording? Like, say, for example, Sayak builds some sort of NFT project, and he claims that the steps he performed to create the art were his steps, and he didn't steal this from somebody. And he provides you with sort of source file data. Like, for example, Photoshop files, or like maybe some recording of the creation process of some kind. Is there a way to store that also along with the NFT, like the history of its creation, sort of?
That's just like a trade. It's like a traditional trademark agreement, and like you would just. Is there a way to store that type of a contract in the blockchain?
Yeah, you can. See, now depends on how you manage your whole process, right? So if it's on a GitHub repo, then yeah, everything can be recorded and committed and all that. And you can put up everything on the storage itself. So I think more than the process, this issue might be with the end product, which is a piece of art, whether it's a JPEG or a music or whatnot. So Safi, in our case, I think the banners and badges, we need to get in touch with each of the project, which we're going to be making the badge of, because that's probably violating their logo or trademark or patent or whatnot that we can use and make them as a badge. Means like what Prism just did, right? They launched their own NFT for one P Luna, but then they are using their own logo. But tomorrow, if we have to use Prism as our badge, then we need to reach out to Prism and say, can we use this and make a badge out of it? Just for NFT.
So it's interesting. That's actually, it's something I'm actually like sort of interweaving into this and trying to like run it as I do it. But I've been doing a lot of these collaborations with different projects, like the, you know, I'm doing behind the scenes Dystopia AI and Terra Mochi and Derby Stars. And on my recent one, I created a version of the character from the Derby Stars intellectual property. And they said, yeah, I could use it, right? But ultimately, I'm going to need an actual contract that says, no, David can use this in his show or in his storyline without, you know, Derby Stars sort of claiming rights to whatever it is that I want to create. And I would want to get that signed before I go and insert that character into my show. Otherwise, as a community or as a rights holder, whoever the rights holder is, they could prevent me from, you know, sort of moving forward with my project. So as long as we get the right agreements and sign the right licensing agreements from
the characters. Because as you know, it's like everything is fine until it's not, right? Like
until it's not.
So these are exactly. These are all the offline discussion within our group, because we need to put them on paper and hash it out one after the other. Everything should be in black and white as long as we can.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about this specifically from a individual project perspective. I'm just sort of like getting a feel for the industry a little bit here, just like the kinds of, you know, all the different comments and discussion have just sort of led to kind of like a feel for how things have been done in the past and maybe like, what kinds of, because the conversation with Hank originally was really about the development process of tools to make it more, make the production of NFTs more rational, from everything from metadata to maybe like data that's included in the NFT regarding maybe collaborators, right? Like say some collaborators all have to sign the you know, final mint or something like that, saying that yes, in fact, we were involved, or you know, everyone agrees that who was involved with the project. Those kinds of like the rights components, that ultimately, like Cookies is saying, like where you if there was a problem and an illegal event happened, like with Skeleton Punks, right? There is clearly a actual documentation on chain of who the collaborators were, what their roles were, or some other sort of like, you know, textual data that clarifies this, that everyone has physically signed somehow, right? It's like your on-chain documentation tools for this. And Cookies, is that what you're trying to accomplish, or am I like missing the point of what you guys are developing? Because you were saying you were building something like this.
Yeah, as for the NFT licenses, indeed. But I was more talking about the commercial use. Usage of those as Legionnaire and Mundus were talking about. But as for that, we can already like create instantiate in thanks to a multisig an NFT collection, and then sign the as well the minting transaction with the multisig. That's not something that's complicated to do, clearly not. But the only thing will be to create the UI to go with it.
Yeah, Hank, is that any part of the bedrock concept? Is there going to be the ability to put collaborators together to be able to sign something, or is that not part of that yet?
I mean, multi-sig minting of NFTs or like collection releasing?
Well, I guess somehow figuring out like who the various parties that have built this thing are, and is there a way to sort of record that data, to David's point? Because he was like, the concern is like, okay, you used components of some artist, and they come back later and say, hey, no, you didn't get permission from me. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, this right? is so, where I say you negotiate your primary and your secondary assets. So if you're, you know, if they're a core contributor to this particular creation, because, you know, really NFTs are like frameworks for property rights, in my opinion. And like those communities that are going to grow are going to be the ones that respect them the most. So as long as everyone that's as a core contributor, so whether it's a mod or a developer, a community manager, a product manager, like everyone that believes in, like all of us here, right, we could all put our names onto a smart contract and have equal ownership of X asset. So it's really up to like whatever you want to bake in the code, right?
I mean, shit, yeah, that's, yeah, if we wanted to write the Declaration of Independence right now and then we could all sign it, and that's how that works, yeah. We all sign the State of Terra NFTs or something. That's just, yeah.
Independence of like Declaration DAO.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept, actually. Just have like an NFT, like a standards document sort of, and everyone decides, okay, this is how we're going to play this game. And, exactly. You know, there's like a...
That's a smart, isn't that just like a smart contract? We go, these are the rules.
Yeah.
And this is what but we're like going to
basic, the basic rights of, you know, the artist and the team and like, you know yeah. What's considered... you know, and you know, it could be voluntary. Like people can sign that as a either a marketplace, or they could sign it as an NFT maker. And so it's like not like an honesty statement, but like this idea that like, okay, we all agree that, you know, this framework is how we want to do things moving forward.
Yeah, in our community, and those that want to join will adopt our community. But I think they would, because we're all doing it in lieu of decentralization, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's how most NFTs, in the way I see them, like are like the profile picture ones. You're like buying your way into a community, and so if we one like the intellectual property, if we built something really sick on Terra, then people would eat like on Solidity. All your smart contracts are public, so anyone can just like copy and paste it, versus like reverse engineering. There's like, it's a higher incentive for people to move over to Terra than to,
interesting thing was, because like I interviewed, I think it was almost like 3-4 weeks ago, right before the anarchists did their mint, right? And they have a neat 3D kind of artwork, and they've got a group that originally deployed on, and those guys that they originally started on Solana. And what they really liked about Terra was just like how much more straightforward it is to actually mint and get a project, you know, released until like this recent fiasco that obviously pissed them off big time. Like they're obviously not happy about how that played out with the you know shenanigans with their marketplace. But you know, it's sad that like, you know, a month ago I chatted with them and they felt pretty good about what was going on, and then all of this sort of garbage had to happen, and then it like taints their project indirectly, you know, and it leaves a bad taste in their mouth. And, you know, if bad experiences happen, people aren't going to have, you know, good stories to tell other NFT platforms who are interested in coming to Terra. You know, so it just creates a chain reaction of chaos if you don't have a system, but who knows?
That's what I mean. Like by setting up the rules prior to that, this is why we can set up the rules now. You know, if Luart had set up those governance rules prior to however they distribute certain things, then they wouldn't run into that issue. So I think what we're trying to do is make sure that we can like find all the holes in the boat and then go, cool, this is how we need to build it. And I feel like with some of the minds here, that can be achieved.
And you know, these marketplaces, if they're like, you know, if they don't have the money to function, like let's just say their problem is not necessarily greed, but they're just broke. Well, then we have a larger problem then. And that is that like, the agreements that projects are getting into with marketplaces are not financially viable, right? Like that's a different series of problems. And if that's the case, and you know, you're finding that projects have to monkey around in the background stealing people's shit, well, that's not good, obviously. Like what, with so much possible capital on the, like in future projects coming to a platform that are on the line, so to speak, to get greedy about dealing with, you know, individual artists or individual groups is really kind of pathetic in my view. Like that's the right. Like
no different really than, you know, like, I mean, I don't know if you have, but like I worked pharmacy for years, right? And there's a certain responsibility that comes with that, right? Where you're around narcotics all day and certain things, right? It's almost like the same thing with the marketplace, that there's a certain responsibility and power that they have. And not to compare, you know, the same thing to controlled substances, but it really is like they have a ton of power. At, you know, if it's not open source, we have no idea what the fuck they're doing.
I have to agree with you, but I also have to disagree on some points. It depends on really the business model that you are playing, and it really depends on the attitude that you're taking with the projects. Going from the principle that you're going to allocate a lot of resources to make that specific collection powerful and successful because you want that, is going to indeed require a lot of money. If you build a tool and let a playground for artists to play with, if you let the tools free to use, and you just have to pay for the transaction like on any other dApp, but that's all you will have to pay to the marketplace, actually you get less greed, you got less misuse, you got less malicious intent, actually.
That's very brilliant, that's... Captain. That's very brilliant. I could say that.
Yeah, that's, no, well, I'm just saying like the way that the marketplaces are built and maybe funded, and how there's a lot of sort of like off-chain activity happening. And you're not just interacting with a dApp at the marketplace to release a mint, for example. That's where some of the drama began, right? Like you have to trust people in the background. It's not a fully trustless system. That's where some of the problems started happening.
Yeah, like I'll give you an example. Yeah, like I had someone do exactly what Aston was doing, essentially. And I had to end up reporting him because he started out taking like one pill and then all of a sudden he's taking, you know, full bottles, and it eventually just gets so out of hand that, you know, like these marketplaces have a lot of power at the end of the day. So it's just, it can get perpetually out of control.
Yeah, that's why we tend to avoid those kind of interaction at Talis. Like you want to launch, okay, we can give you the tech support. There is no issue with that. You need some help to write your CSV or to name your traits? Okay, we can give you ideas and guide you along with the tutorial that we created, but we don't imply ourselves financially in those. The only one that we did was the Terrans, because we actually envisioned the Terrans and created the Terrans with NARM, but that's the only project that was ever tied to Tarif.
So if you guys don't know, but Luna Warden decided to not list on Luart. Public just voted 68% against listing on Luart. So now they are changing the platform because of the amount that this is
for a long time. They were fully questioned last night.
can I
The community has responded. So now I think platform will change, push it the launch by 2 to 3 weeks. That would be good. They weren't even getting me on the whitelist even I submitted the address and said, no, we can't change it. I said, why? You can put your cousin's address and not mine. That's not fair.
Yeah, Ro, go ahead. What's up?
Yeah, so I was going to ask another question regarding like the marketplaces. Along with that, the Hellhounds launch, I was seeing threads about, you know, bots had bought up a good significant part of the supply, and some people were, you know, pissed off about that. And then some people were, you know, taking a stance of, well, bots exist, you know, you're just effectively, if you got a public launch or a public ability to mint, be thankful that you have one. So is that kind of the sentiment that there's nothing too much that can be done with bots?
Yeah, Hank this is an important thing that I've been dreaming up ideas for. So have you thought of anything that in the way things are whitelisted or the way mints are created to prevent this problem of like perpetual problems with bots? I know, like, for example, on the DeFi side of things, if you look at like what Prism and FanFury and a few people have done, Nebula recently, there was this concept of the like lock drop idea, where initially when say an NFT is released, is it actually possible to make them like purposefully overpriced and then like create some system similar to a lock drop mechanism? Is there, you know, where the price of the NFTs drops over time, sort of like an anti-bot measure of some kind?
So see, the problem is the wallet, right? Now, can you limit by the wallet? Yes, you can. But then how many wallets you are allowing? Person can have one wallet or 100 wallets, and he can deposit and do all with 100 wallets, right? So both can be avoided, but not like multiple wallets. How are we going to get that?
Well, no, I'm wondering, create a system where it doesn't matter, right? So if you look at how lock drops work, like let's say Ro creates an NFT project and, you know, they start out at 1,000 Luna, right? So nobody wants Ro's shitty NFT for 1,000 Luna. So it goes to 999 and it goes 998 and or whatever, right? Like the price keeps falling over time. And when the price hits levels where buyers start getting interested, then you'll start seeing actual buyers. Some sort of like countdown like that, I think would help substantially. I don't know if it's feasible to implement such a thing. Hank, any thoughts on something like that?
Well, I mean, couldn't we do that from like, wouldn't that happen inherently from like market pressure? If like there's tons of bots and we could say there's like a certain number of mints, maybe people, oh yeah, that could be interesting, like rolling them out one by one or something, and then like people can bid on them, and you could do that quickly. I don't know. Yeah, I mean I hadn't thought of that,
because anything that prevents you know, a simple automation of buying and selling by creating either multiple wallets or whatever, like by having some scheme where, you know, the market is like a I guess not a mango market auction, but oh, and that's the other thing too, a mango market might work as well for something like this, like more less so for DeFi, maybe more so for NFTs. Like let's say, for example, you have, you know, 1,000 NFTs available, and the value of those NFTs is however much UST is deposited into that vault. And then ultimately the price is set by the number of people that put money into that vault. And I guess that may have pros and cons in terms of like a whale could still technically deposit a shit ton of money in there. But from the perspective of the actual NFT, see, but it doesn't make sense to do that because it drives up the price of your own NFTs to where you might not be able to sell them for that price again. So it disincentivizes that to some extent. But maybe like, but from the perspective of the NFT project, like if their goal is to, you know, okay, we need to make $1 million in this project, and some whale throws $1 million in there and decides to buy them all, well, fuck it, he just bought them all, he can sell them, or whatever, right? Like, so there's different ways to look at this. I don't know. There's something not right about the entire NFT like whitelist slash marketplace thing. As a user, I think it's just like when I go in there and I'm like, someone's like, oh yeah, we're minting such and such and go check it out. And everyone's sitting there and like can't actually get in to actually mint something. The entire process seems like there has to be a solution for it. But it seems like, I don't know if all the possible permutations.
I think you need to curate.
What's that?
Like curate, like your own group, like this. It's a curated group of people that believe in the mission, as opposed to like opening up the floodgates to a bunch of people that don't understand what's going on. You know, because I think a lot of the time,
my original thought was, you know what? All of the initial NFTs go to the whitelisted people, right? There's not even a need to have a non-white list. Why even bother? Yeah. Like, if the people on the white list are going to get the first dibs, lowest prices anyway, screw it. Why make a big thing out of it? Let the whitelisted folks get all the NFTs. Let's say you have one, and maybe you get three extra ones that are intended for sale. And maybe the way that you make it palatable to sell it is the next three, Hank, like say there was a smart contract where the other three that you get out of, like, let's say you get four, and one is designed for you to just keep it as a whitelist holder. The others are designed for you to sell somehow by making them palatable to do so. And then the smart contract for those three gives a much higher royalty for selling or something like that. Maybe it's the other way around. One of them that you get has a really high royalty. So if you sell it as a whitelist holder, you're sort of getting screwed because 90% of the sale goes to the project or something like that, right? And then you have the other ones that you can sell. And then what happens is all the whitelist members become the salesmen for your NFTs, right? Because who is going to be better at deciding to sell these things than your actual community, right?
Right.
I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas.
I mean, are NFTs just memberships to DAOs, and DAOs are just visions? Like, that's kind of my thought process on, like, this concept of a decentralized market. Let's just get commonly incentivized people. I think we have that on Terra, and I think more people would be willing to join in the vision. And then, like, it's a curated thing. Like, we need to, that's where, like, the trust comes in, and the slashing, the, like, social proof of stake. I don't know how to, like, better describe it than that. I think you hit the nail on the head, something like that.
Yeah, because what if the initial NFT project, what if the holders of the whitelisted NFTs, if they're incentivized to sell some of them somehow, whatever that mechanism is, and they're incentivized to keep, you know, maybe their main one or whatever, maybe it creates the right vibe. Because here's the thing, even when you whitelist, right, like, here's what I find unusual. So here you are, you're a member of this community, and you've gotten the opportunity to whitelist an NFT. There's no guarantee that you're going to get any better NFT than anybody else. You get a lower cost of mint. But outside of that, it's like, if you got to at least choose from, like, a series of, like, three that you got, and of those three or four, you get to choose the one you want, and the rest you're incentivized to sell for whatever reason. That would be kind of cool, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
That is really sick. I've been thinking about I've looked into Solana's Metaplex thing a lot.
Oh, you know what? I think I just figured it out. I just figured it out, Hank. So you have the ones that you get one that goes to the whitelist holder, and that one actually earns the utility and yield, right? So you're incentivized to keep that sucker, right? Or if you sell it, you're going to sell it at a higher price. That's fine. But that's the benefit from you being a whitelist holder. But all the other ones don't necessarily have yield. And therefore, your incentive would be to try to not only sell them, but have them, like, really circulate in the marketplace. Maybe that's the right answer, right? Like, there's a differentiation between the whitelisted ones and the rest of them that go outside of simply being, I don't know, something to make money on. So you have the functions of the different types may have different values. So, for example, the initial whitelist one might make you yield, but the rest of them might at least give voting power, for example, if they're in a DAO or something like that. So yeah, there could be some interesting. Yeah.
One be like yield, right? And then almost the other one, like, change the way it looks. So it's like you get a different NFT if you happen to sell it or something. Almost like it mutates, kind of, right? And then you would lose the yield because it's been sold or something.
Yeah, right, exactly. If you are intended to just hold it, but if you sell it, you give up the possibility of royalties. So
that was something I was trying to bring in as well. Is like part of the royalty that would be given to the vault is that, like, if you sell your piece, you give up rights to that pot, you give up rights to those votes, you give up rights to be part of the core squad. And then the existing holders would retain a higher percentage as people decided, sort of like how Luna works, you know, and it's a deflationary asset. You're like, you're trying to add value back to the long term holders,
right? And if some people decide to sell it, Yeah, if someone decides to, one second, if someone decides to sell it and it breaks the yield, then what happens is the remaining yield from the project goes right back to it goes to the rest of the people that decided to hold their stuff, right? So
yeah,
it's a very similar situation right now with, like, for example, Prism tokens. If the more of them you have, the more yield you get directed to your Yluna. And if you decide to have less of those, well, then you get less yield on your Yluna, and that's your business. But you can sell them if you want to and try to profit off of them. Or if you benefit more from the yield, you can keep them. So yeah, this I think there, but there's got to be some sort of mechanism to solve this, like, minting chaos that just is the usual NFT garbage process. It just looks stupid to me. Like,
From the minting address, if the minting address doesn't have this address as your original, and then you are the second or third layer of purchaser, then you're not going to get that benefit. So you can insert the logic in the smart contract how you want to handle that portion.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you have the smart contract logic, you could sort of build out something that makes these have special properties. But yeah, Cookies, go ahead.
I believe that we are also stuck with the problem. Like, we are in a paradigm in the Terra ecosystem that we consider that the candy machine is the best and only way to launch NFTs right now. I believe that's an issue as well. Like, you could imagine as well have the artist mint all the NFTs, sell them at the same time on the web page, and you will get traffic issues. You will get things along those lines, but it will be basically the same, and you will also have to deal with the bots and such. At some point, maybe, and once again, like, I got big brain stalking and trying to solve real issues that many, many projects face right now. But since all projects are pretty much copying themselves on the roadmap, on the utility, on the yield bearing, on the pretty much anything besides the design and maybe the tone, we might need to change that paradigm as well at some point.
Yeah, you know, another way could be that you lock drop all the NFTs, but the entire package of NFTs that you're releasing for secondary public is lock drop simultaneously. And so imagine this. So you have, let's say, 10,000 public NFTs to release. The whitelisted NFTs have already gone through. You have the public ones. How do you create a bot, anti-bot measure? You start the entire package of 10,000 NFTs at, like, I don't know, pick a number, like $100 million or some nonsense, and, you know, whatever, like, is way too high. And then that is ticking down over time. And depending on what fraction of the NFTs in that pool you want, you can basically start putting in cash where you think that the value of the NFT is worth. So if you believe it's worth more, well, you can pay more for it and you can access more of them. If you believe it's worth less, you just wait till that ticker goes down, and you're basically in, like, a anti-bot measure system ultimately. I think that could be pretty interesting. There could be also, you could also incentivize. So, like, let's say you're paying higher prices at the very beginning. Like, let's say at the $100 million mark for this NFT project, you know, you if some idiot goes and puts, you know, money into that, you know, because you're not supposed to buy at the top of a lock drop, right? But let's say you did. Then maybe that increases the probability that you get, like, a legendary or whatever rare item or whatnot, right? Maybe there's special rewards for those people that are willing to pay ridiculous money too, because you don't want to totally disincentivize people throwing money at your project if they want to, right? So maybe, Hank, any theories, like, would that something like that maybe work? I don't know.
Sorry, I started thinking about what you said in the first half as you did the second. Are you saying that, like, have a optional, like, floor, like a predicted price that you can buy at? Or no, I don't think so.
Not so much a predicted. You just have all the NFTs that are for public availability or for minting, and you just dump all of them into one massive lock drop, right? So you basically, and all you do is you decide, okay, how much UST you want to deposit, and at what valuation of the total lock drop, right? So if like, let's, I don't know, let's use small numbers to make this easy for everyone mathematically here. So let's say you have 10 NFTs available, and you make the lock drop start at $1,000, right? So at $1,000, each NFT is worth $100 a piece. So you, Hank, are like, you know what? I'd like all of these NFTs. The hell with this. I'm going to pay $1,000. I'm going to buy all of them. I think this is an interesting project. I'd like to be an owner of them all. Okay, fine. You can pay $1,000, and you've now paid $100 per NFT. But as the clock ticks down, or the price ticker goes down, it goes from 1,000 to 999, 998, et cetera, right? So over the day, the price falls, and people can decide like what price they want to get in, and you know, all the way to like the lowest possible part, you know, end of the lock drop. So essentially you create the floor price by the end of this like process, and you know, people aren't really necessarily incentivized to dump it at a lower price than they got it at, ideally, right?
So Safi, Luna Punks here, I think he came up with an idea on minting Luna Punks on the blocks of Terra blockchain. Like up to a certain block, it's going to be available at this price, and then it's going to be increased.
Interesting.
So yeah, your method is completely reversed. Like it's going to reduce the price so that if you're trying to get more at the higher price, but then price will be lower down the line.
The issue here is like the anti-bot measures, though, mainly.
I got that. But I think that's interesting how he did Luna Punk minting. We can do the same way, but in reverse order of the cost, which will demoralize anybody to, you know, do at everything at one time, just stay with it and then go to the next level. And it will be everything on-chain. Go ahead.
So it is possible to achieve something like that, and we can fit the price reduction. The thing I worry about is that, you know, wouldn't the bot just sort of like set a price that they will enter in? Or maybe, you know, they might even set a query to the blockchain, you know, if this NFT collection is at 50%, right? If it's minted at 50%, then they'll start running the bot. You know, they'll start.
Sure.
Quickly, listeners as well. You can imagine listeners that you would check if the price has gone to a certain level and then go full pin on that. That's also a possibility. Like bots will always evolve anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if there is a bot, though, the difference is that if they want to pay high amounts for that particular price or whatever, that's their business at that point, right? The beauty here is, you at least have, you don't have the same amount of congestion. So if you definitely want to mint something and you definitely want something, you can just pay more than the bot for it at that point, right? So the problem we have now on Terra or on many of these projects is you just want to go in there and spend some money and buy an NFT and you can't even get in. This is the problem we have now, right? So the difference is at least if you want to pay the money, you could, right?
So I know a guy who made a bot on Terra. Right. And that bot actually, what it does, it scans through different platforms and look out for the listings, which are 50% less price in terms of the minting price. And if it finds something, it will get that item and send it back to the owner as a good gesture, like, don't do this, you know, somebody will rob you. So he's doing it in a good sense, but I think that is possible to how to avoid that. Maybe we can get in touch with that person. I already contacted him for something else, but yeah, I mean, this can be done. It's not something impossible to do.
Yeah. So I actually have an idea. I believe we have sort of like a price reduction idea so far, and like maybe a lock drop idea, right? What I really like from Ethereum is that they have this pre-mint. They have this pre-mint website where, you know, people who want to mint a particular NFT collection, they can pull in their mint price first. So if the mint is probably at maybe 1 Luna, right? So you can put in the 1 Luna, but you won't get to mint it directly, you know. So the funds is held until a certain point where, let's say, we have a 1,000 NFT collection, right? But we get, you know, tens of thousands of people wanting to mint. So they would add in their 1 Luna, or 10,000 of them, they'll add in their 1 Luna, and then it will go through a raffle, right? So it's fair because it's randomized, right? It's raffle. And maybe the way to beat the bots is to have like a transaction fee, you know, because bots are sending unlimited amount of transactions and they have, you know, they are putting in a lot of funds in it. Right, so maybe by adding like a increased transaction fee, then we can sort of like stamp out the bots, and we know that the people who are actually, you know, submitting a pre-mint are actual people. And, you know, we could always put the transaction fees back to the committee, right? Such that whatever is earned from the bots or whatever it is, whoever who wants to mint, will go back to committee at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Another idea that I was having regarding bots, and I don't know if it's possible, but on the idea of fees, say you're minting NFTs for $100. Well, every mint will effectively have a random amount of dust added to it. So if I go to mint and I want to mint two, instead of minting at $100 even, I'm minting one at $100.02 and the other one at $100.035 or something like that. That way, every transaction that doesn't go through that meets that exact amount is automatically rejected. So I don't know if that's kind of like on a multi-sig type minting, but I have seen something similar done.
do like a randomization where you know, like your $1 NFT might be $10,000 and someone has to actually check. Otherwise, if you just run a bot, you get screwed because now your wallet's just drained for $10,000. Although that's going to cause consumer confusion, I guess. I'm just messing around, but anyway.
Or we can have stages of dropping NFT. So like, you know, multiple stages of different value. So if you were to change the value like upfront, there is no advance notice or anything like that.
But
a lot of ways to do that.
What is the primary incentive for people? Like, describe to me if you guys like, because I don't really go and buy a lot of NFTs, but give me an example of like, how are people spending? So if you're running a bot and you want to get a lot of NFTs for cheap, they're doing this because what? They're trying to mint as many like rare ones as possible so that they can kind of like sweep the market as cheap as possible and then make as much money on the follow-up sales? Or are they just going to try to make money on every sale? Like what's the business model these guys are running?
Both, right? Like how many I can get? Because I don't care about the price. It's a quantity. Because I can sell pretty much everything double the price because the minting cost will be lower. Because the floor will be, as long as the marketplace is open, the floor will be at least double or something. Or not even double, let's say 1.5, right? But still I'm making something. So at least I can cover my gas fees. That's first. And then the profit comes in. So if I get, let's say, instead of one NFT, I get 10 NFTs, I'll probably keep 2 or 4 and then sell everything else, not like dollar cost averaging, but exactly reverse, profit cost averaging. So my profit will increase over the period. And then eventually I will be all in profit, right? Because I'm covering my cost with a couple of NFTs and then let it sit idle and then wait for the floor to rise up and then sell gradually one at a time.
The reason I ask this is because a different way to look at this is, okay, well, if you can't beat the bots, another angle is to basically create a system where you expect them to be there and it maximally benefits the NFT platform, and indirectly somehow on the secondary sale, it benefits the rest of the consumer somehow too. Like that's the some game theory where that is ends up becoming a win-win for everybody. And I'm not sure that's possible, but anyway.
Yeah, but it is possible. We just have to think about on a bigger scale, like you all can meet up and figure out the strategies, but not something I would say impossible. It is doable. And I've seen the models, how it can be done, like Too Much Lag. That is one of the Ethereum project, right? And they came up with this idea on increasing the price over the period. So if you are in certain time and if you get into the system and able to mint, then your price will be there. But then after an hour, if you try to get it in, you're not going to make it, right? Because the price is double. Same with scarcity on Bitcoin using Litecoin, Lightning Network, and using Blue Wallet. So if you want to bid for an item, it has to be up to a certain block, then the price will rise. And you know that because the block is changing, right? So there are multiple ways to do that. And you have to send the fees in that time to bid the system. Otherwise, your charges will be higher, your cost will be higher. And every time when you do the transaction, you have to keep in mind the gas fees also, because if you have to send it to the next block, then your cost is increasing, then you need more BTC to cover the more fees. So
Hudson hopped up. Any comments on this discussion?
Just an idea, maybe like kind of like Prism, how they have like the mint, like a claim and pledge. Maybe like you mint and pledge that you're not going to sell it for, you know, a day, a week, whatever. And to incentivize this, you would have a higher transactional cost in the beginning of the mint, maybe to, you know, scare off the bots somehow. I don't know if that would work anyway, but just a thought.
Yeah, Hank, did you have a
thought? I had a thought that was inspired by that. If you want to. But yeah, I think the it's really interesting. Shit, I keep losing my ideas.
Or we can swing back to you.
Using post-it notes on your laptop, just stick it on the yellow ones.
Space Toads, maybe you can get a comment while Hank remembers what he's going to say. Actual toad sound. That's awesome.
Actually, totally accurate. I was thinking the same.
Space Toads. Do you actually speak English or just speak toad? That's awesome. Came so well prepared. That's amazing.
Yeah. Hey, Lunapunks, can you repeat your question? Sorry.
Yo, I wanted to drive the sort of like the concept in a really darker tone, because like, you know, if the teams were to use the bots for their own benefit, that would be crazy, because, you know, at the end of the day, if the funds, the mean fees, right, if the funds are going back to the team, right, and if they can essentially create like a fake market, like a fake demand, if they sort of like bought their own, you know, mint NFT collections. So I think the scary thing is that is like the worst case scenario, if a team actually mints their own NFT to create like a fake demand.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I think like network connection and network congestion and it makes sense to do that. Like, that's where I kind of like that block strategy. Maybe it does make more sense to like step it down, like Seffy said. Like, if we start the price at $1 million, that forces me to actually think about what this NFT is worth. And I think that, I mean, that these ideas sound really good to me. Mandeep, do you have any input on that?
No, I think, yeah, that, as I said, like, it is doable. We need to think about what is the best strategy to go for, do all the pros and cons. I mean, it's not something we can decide right now. It has to be a discussion.
I mean, each possible scenario has a different style of attack vector, ultimately. So I think the goal of the goals of the project, I think, have to be kind of looked at. Like, so number one, I think most projects want as many NFTs in the hands of as many users as possible, because development of a larger community and a widespread user base is key. The second thing I think NFT communities want and seem to be a problem is the reduction of sales within the same community, right? Like, it's one thing to say, you know, okay, I sold a bunch of stuff to 5,000 people. It's another thing to say, how are you going to bring in the next 10,000 people or the next 50,000 people? And a lot of NFT projects suffer from the product problem of like everyone just buying shit from each other. That's a different type of kind of incentive.
So one way I find, which is very innovative, not easy, to find out the wallets, means first of all, we need to see, like, are you interested in getting this NFT? Yes. And there will be a Google form for this, right? Okay, what's your wallet ID? This is the wallet ID. Have you done any transactions at least before 9 months on Terra ecosystem?
Yeah, wallet analysis.
Right?
Wallet analysis.
We are not going into details, but we just want one transaction which is 9 months old. 11-month-old or, you know, 1-year-old, something, just to get the eligibility criteria. If there is a board and if they are minting brand new wallets just to get into the NFT and, you know, this is the system, then it's not going to work because we know the address which done something in the Terra ecosystem.
Yeah, it's like the Prism. Consider those. It's like the Prism release that just happened.
Yeah, right? This Prism release, right? Like, I mean, Prism release is still like the whitelisting criteria is something kind of screwed up. Jimmy already tweeted about it. He's trying to fix, but I think it's not possible.
But the idea is same.
I help you, but I'm not whitelisted. So.
Right, but certain on-chain tasks led to...
has to be, yes.
Resulted in getting whitelisted in that example. Yeah, implementation might not have been 100% perfect, but the idea is... like you're analyzing the wallet data so that your people aren't just spinning up new wallets.
Correct. And it has to be some kind of duration on it, right? Like it has to be an older one, not something you just spin up a couple of weeks ago or months ago. So that's how we become eligible. So that is completely, you know, board cannot do that because every time they might be spinning up a new wallet and then deal with that wallet to get the NFT. So...
yeah, this is where some projects, that's why they do like a token and some governance actions or something like that to kind of like prove that this wasn't just an arbitrary new wallet, right? It doesn't have to be very complicated, actually. But the problem is these kinds of solutions are more valuable for the existing initial whitelist, though. They're not as useful for dealing with just simply the general public. And the reason is because many people are going to have public wallets that they use for buying NFTs that they don't want their private wallet to be used for, so that they don't dox themselves as far as like their primary funds. So it's not uncommon that people use fresh wallets for these types of processes. So that's the downside to that kind of like wallet analysis approach, I would say. But some sort of like some mixture of sort of like an auction or reverse auction or whatever you want to call it, where lock drop concept to me seems feasible, like as a way to get this done. I think it ends up aligning all of the interests involved. And an interesting strategy that was used by the 777 casino people where, okay, like they had like 10,000 or some number, I think 10,000 $100 NFTs available. And any NFTs that they did not sell, they would burn the rest of them. And because all of them are identical, they would burn the rest of them. And the revenue from the casino would go to, you know, the people that actually hold the remaining NFTs. Something like that is how they produce their system. And therefore, like, they produce just a vast excess of NFTs that are bullshit, right? And that's another tactic too, is if you create a mechanism where, you know, you're literally just creating a lot of bullshit NFTs that don't have any meaning, and maybe you have to do additional interactions with your mint, not just the initial mint, but you have to do several like tasks, then you get your final mint. You could actually gamify this into like a CAPTCHA sort of, where the, you know, so like on Lootopians is a good example. You go there and you know, you get a hat for your Lootopian, you get your shirt for your Lootopian and your shoes or whatever. You buy some shit and then so imagine if you just your initial buy is just a placeholder NFT. And you'd have to do a variety of other things to make that NFT sort of useful. So the initial one is just to get the public to get their hands on them. And then once you have lots and lots of people with their hands on them, then, you know, you would play the game to make the you would sort of play a series of steps and games to essentially get the final NFT to be produced and minted to its final rarity or whatever, right? So you'd have to have some kind of like, not a CAPTCHA, but something like that, where tasks create the final NFT, and you start out with essentially what amounts to a placeholder. And the other the other interesting thing you could do with like a placeholder NFT concept is you could airdrop placeholder NFTs to, like, let's say, all the people that have ever used a platform, or let's say like all the people that have ever owned a Luna Punk, you can automatically airdrop the placeholder to, or you could airdrop a placeholder to like, for example, everyone who's ever used Nowhere, right? So you already have your target audience is people that already use these platforms. And you know that they buy NFTs, right? So because you already have like a list of all the wallets that have ever interacted with those contracts. And you could basically just airdrop to, the placeholder NFT, you could airdrop it to all these people. And then whatever games you have to play afterwards to get your final mint in terms of buying certain components or whatever, you could make that into a fun little game. Like you could have your placeholder could then be used to enter yourself into the lock drop. It could be used to enter yourself into maybe like the chance to create rarity. So like make the rarity piece a second step, right? So if you do like this thing, and this thing, the odds of you getting a legendary are much higher. But if you only do like these two steps, then your odds are less. Something like that. You could gamify it a little bit more, and then you could make anti-bot tactics happen that way. Maybe I don't know, Hank. What do you?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea as well. As I said, like depends on the project we're gonna deal with. We can make that as a logic in the smart contract, how you can become eligible and get more kind of rare NFTs rather than just basic ones.
Hank, do you have a can you comment to like on a development side, like what that would mean to have like an NFT that's built up in steps, sort of? Is that even rational or doable?
I mean, yeah, I think like there's multiple ways of doing it, and it's like kind of up to us to decide. Like, well, it's up to anyone to decide how they want to do it, and like you could do that through like updates or something. Like you can, if someone has control over the contract and you want to like update it, then that's fine. Like someone will have to keep control of that. If that fits, then it does. Or you could have like derivatives where you're like showing a chain and like minting and burning stuff. I think that's like an interesting way, and that second one seems a little more like extendable to me. Like we can build off of this with like new ideas that we'll have like 4 months from now.
Yeah, or like let's say you buy sort of like the base level, or you get airdropped the base level sort of like entry ticket, so to speak, right? You would burn your entry ticket to get into the game or whatever, and ultimately you'd be issued the next like component or whatever at some time period in the future. So if you want a lot of interaction with your particular project and you want people to come back and sort of like do steps to play the game, almost like there's a series of lotteries, so to speak, like where each step is like a chance to get certain components, right? And then that's when you finally will determine mathematically how you get your rarer or legendary or whatever pieces. I don't know. There seems to be I think there's a way to get around this problem where maybe and what's happening here is you're sort of sequentially whitelisting people, right? So you have your broad whitelist to start with, and then you have like your super whitelist, which is like the people that completed the components after they received the initial, and then it goes on from there, right? So, and then, it may only take like two or three steps, and you basically have all the anti-bot measures you basically need to solve most of this problem, is what I'm guessing. So,
that Prism thing was really interesting. That's what immediately comes to mind for me. For anyone who doesn't know, they generated a whitelist of anyone who like had refracted a P Luna, and they're airdropping them to people on one planet. And that's pretty sweet. And they have like the fact that people didn't know that that was going to happen before Prism really started. That's kind of what I feel like, that's like safe. Like there's a source of truth there. These people were genuinely into this community. I think that's really important. Like you don't even have to do that with whitelists. Like, it might make more sense, but if we have like a safe way of doing whitelists where we don't have to like hand it over to people. But I think that like on-chain derivation is like really important to like prove that, because we have like certain activities that are provable and like people are incentivized to do them. Like bots are only incentivized to do certain things if they don't know about it already. So we might have just screwed ourselves over here.
Yeah. The other thing too is, what a bot can't necessarily do is predict what's aesthetically nice. That's, what someone I mentioned someone yesterday who is heavy into NFT buying was sort of commenting on. Therefore, like, if there is a process whereby you are like picking components of your NFT mint that you think are aesthetically interesting, and that creates some of the variety, and it's sort of like it's an experience that you have building this NFT. It's not entirely randomized. Like, there's randomized elements, like, you know, like regenerative art and whatnot, but like there's parts that you choose. Maybe the best possible derivatives aren't actually available unless you think about it for a little bit, right? It's like proof of thought and or proof of interaction, and then like the nicer NFT gets produced. But if you let a bot do it, it's going to just come up with bullshit, right? Like, it won't come out right or something like that. Like, or yeah, or I don't know, you gamify it somehow to where, like, you know, if you don't do it right, your shit gets burned or something. You know, so the bot, it doesn't make sense to use a bot because it's you would have to do too. You'd have to go through too much trouble to plan a bot specifically for this.
Yeah, that. Yeah, I think that's like, yeah, that's kind of like the core truth of what we kind of need. Like, we just need, yeah, we need a way to disincentivize bots for this. Yeah, I think that's one solid idea. Yeah.
Bros, did you have a idea about the situation? I'm not sure if his mic's working or whatever. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, I think he had some audio trouble. Anyway, yeah, it's a overall good conversation. I think definitely some ideas to throw out for up and coming projects. And Hank, I was just mainly wanting to bring it up with you because the you know, these might be ideas that might help the sort of bedrock layer or help in the contract layer to understand like what NFT projects actually need, what kind of problems that they're actually needing solved, and you know, what things can be solved on a base contract layer and might be solutions that everyone can benefit from and sort of built into the base function of NFTs versus those things that are too niche or whatever that, you know, should be left up to the individual projects. Right. So.
Yeah, totally. I think that, yeah, this like way of like gathering ideas and stuff. And like, if anyone wants to build too. Yeah. Like, I want this to be like as open as possible, like developed by the community. And I think that, yeah, today was like really productive. I definitely have a ton of new ideas. I think, I'm guessing other people are thinking about NFTs in a new way after this. So I think this was really productive. Yeah.
Cool. And I think Bros had a question or comment. We'll kind of close with him, I think. See,
yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. Yeah, my phone was dying. I was switching between devices real fast. But thanks for pulling me back in. And when you were saying like about the aesthetically pleasing art, like bot created stuff, you guys, PS Labs and Dystopia AI projects both sort of have a really innovative way of doing that, right? Because like their NFTs are basically badges, especially in the PS. I missed sort of the mint on the Dystopia or the Dystopia AI one, but PS Labs is pretty cool because once you're a badge holder, then that sort of different levels of badge holders are able to request different things from the bot. So like, sure, the guys at PS Labs could have just put their bot out, use their bot to make a bunch of their ideas, or had the bot make a random list of AI ideas, but instead they're having the community use their badges to figure out how best to run these bots, how often should we run them, how many mints should we do per week, per month, you know, should certain mints require more badges, or should certain mints be reserved for people who have 10 badges. I think that sort of is another area where we're looking at, where like, yeah, NFTs are useful, useless, but you got to be paying attention at different iterations of this. Like, check in each week, you can be part of the mint. If you don't check in enough, you might not have the right badge to be part of this mint. And, you know, I think that's totally.
Yeah, you're kind of gamifying it to an extent, right? To make it so yeah. That like the highest rarity items or highest quality pieces end up getting built by you, the user who makes the most effort. And that can be good or bad in the sense that like people's attention spans are sort of short, right? people have different things happening in their lives. Not everyone can play like an overly gamified system. I think to the extent that you can do a few things to reduce kind of overt benefits by bot users versus individual community members in terms of the minting process, I think that's the key. Making it too difficult is also going to be a problem. People are going to be like, ah, fuck it, I don't want to do this because it's just too hard. So some people just want to grab a piece of art. They're not interested in all the shenanigans around it. So that's kind of what I like about this lock drop idea, though, is that ultimately, you know, it creates a floor price. It creates a... you know, you can get in if you want to pay a little extra money because you don't care and you just want to have access, fine. If you want to run your bots and, you know, risk the possibility that you're paying too much for your assets, that's fine. So, you know, some sort of system where it's agnostic to who it is it's buying, and just like creating possible opportunities for whoever, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, that's alpha. It's going to make sense to the next generation even more so, which is what really matters on all of this stuff. Like 100%, there's like, I'll dox myself slightly and tell you I'm a teaching assistant for a virtual school. I work with 7 to 14-year-old kids on a weekly basis. These kids know how to do a Dutch auction. That's part of our game, right? These kids know how auctions work. These kids know what art is. They know what aesthetically pleasing art is. They know what revenue is. They know all this stuff, and they're freaking smarter than me. They're 10 years old. We got a smart generation coming. We gotta be smarter than them now, so that we put the right infrastructure, so they don't got to do a bunch of work, and they can just use this stuff, put their art out there for their community.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, some of these like are related to what sort of Hank is doing from a creating like base smart contract things, and then I think Pete's doing, right, like with you know, Terabytes Pete with the Open Buffet project. So all these different tools ultimately help people build these different possibilities. And I think Prism's lock drop for coins is also, I believe it's open source, or I'm not sure. Fan Fury used it on theirs as well. But I'd be super interested in seeing an NFT project of some kind just experimentally launched on that lock drop mechanism. And maybe all you have to really do is actually use the same mechanism that you use to get coins, right? For similar to how you get non-fungible tokens, you could get fungible tokens instead. And depending on how many you get, that's how many, you know, mints you get or something like that or whatever, right? So you could do a series of steps. It could be a lock drop to get coins. Those coins are then used to, you know, buy the NFTs. And the more of them you have, the more NFTs you can get or something like that, right? So even a two-step process like that might be rational depending what the teams are trying to accomplish. So we'll see. Okay, cool. Yeah, good catching up with you. And Hank, thanks for the all the info. And I think we were able to share some ideas back and forth today that maybe we can build some shit together at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I appreciate you helping do this talk. And yeah, and everyone for tuning in and putting in ideas. I think that this is like really how we can start building like a really better system, is just by building it for everyone.
Yeah, we had almost like over a half dozen projects come through and talk about their sort of experiences and whatnot. So that's awesome. Well, cool. At 3 o'clock, I'm going to go get lunch, but like today is my day off, but so I'm just screwing around here all day. I've at three in a couple of hours, we're going to be talking to Simon with Loop Finance. They have a lot of interesting things coming to their platform, so you might want to check out that discussion. So I will catch you guys later.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of the two-part CeFi space developing for NFT artists, recorded on Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Check both out.
bullets, yo, we're locked and loaded. Coming through to test y'all works of oldest. Like the motherfucking past ain't relevant. Selling these cats on the same old developments. Folks packed into the housing projects, never even known what it's like to prosper. Fuck that, y'all, I thought this was America. Marinating in the raw bold is our character. The fight that's ahead, shit, it won't be easy. It's like the MPP got people greedy. That's the narrative of perpetual progression, and it's civilization's darkest lesson. Don't take it from me, look the fuck around and know what to look for before it goes down. And know what you're good for when they come to your town. Cross that threshold and get drunk the fuck out.
Check out the tech. Check out the tech. Check out the technique. Check out the tech. Check out the tech. Check out the technique. Check out the rhythm. Check out the tech. Check out the technique. Check out the tech. Check out the tech, out the technique.
You better farm your land or it'll get farmed for you. Big pharma farming hemp, the greed's loyal. It's all in these documents I bring forward. The nobles are obviously in league with big oil. When we release the lease on these resources, we'll need, of course, a briefcase and three sorcerers, complete with Greek sources and people to pull the trigger when I give these orders. Struggling a while with these disorders, chaotic neutral but still wishing he was in orbit. Stonks only go up. When did this shit become do or die? Viva Elon Musk will be my battle cry. I mean, somebody's gotta lead the autists into battle when we finally defeat the bosses. Level up shit and shift the wealth and make sure you keep a little bit for yourself.
Check out the tech, tech, tech. Check out the tech, check out the technique. Check out the tech, tech, tech. Check out the tech, check out the technique. Check out the rhythm, tech, tech, rhythm. Check out the tech, check out the technique. Check out the tech, tech, tech. Check out the tech, check out the technique.
Check the spaces.